Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 13th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, Tyson Foods and the state of Illinois have reached an agreement on a lawsuit related to odors. And researchers are investigating how to use the ethanol byproduct DDG for human consumption. It's low in calories and high in protein and fiber. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then, just as farmers begin to gear up to harvest soybeans around the nation, we'll hear about some work University of Illinois scientists have been doing to isolate greenstem. And don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we always check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy on Mondays to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. You'll hear it all today, right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report. Before we get started, just a couple reminders that tomorrow we expect to be at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. We'll come to you live during the Closing Market Report from Campus Town, that's otherwise known as the Twilight Ballroom, situated between the Expo Building and the Coliseum. Come visit us in that building. It's air-conditioned. A great place to be this week, the Illinois State Fair. And make sure you put this one on your calendar for the end of the week. This Thursday, August the 17th, is the 50th Agronomy Day right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois on the South Farms. That morning kicks off at 7 a.m. when I'll be dispatching wagons into the research fields for four different sets of tours. It's absolutely free. It'll take you most of the morning to see all of those plots, so come early. There is a noon hour lunch. You can buy that if you'd like. But stay during the noon hour to hear Eldon Gould give a keynote from the USDA RMA, Think Risk Management Agency, and Crop Insurance. Come see us on the South Farms here in Urbana at 7 a.m. Thursday morning this week for Agronomy Day. It's the 50th one.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat at 374, up a quarter of a cent. December futures were down 1 1/4 at 394 and a quarter for the day. September wheat in Kansas City at $4.44, settled down 10 1/4 today. September corn futures in Chicago, $2.222. That's rather $2.22. They were off 2 3/4 for the day. December futures at $2.38 1/4, down 3 1/2. And March futures at $2.53 1/4, were off 3 1/2. December contract down 1 1/2 cents at $2.89 1/2. Soybeans now. The August contract, $5.49 3/4, down a penny and a quarter. September beans at $5.56 1/4 were up 1. And the November beans for this year at $5.69 1/4 were up a penny. November beans for 2007 at $6.25. That contract settled 1/4 cent lower for the day. Bean meal August contract, 48 lower at 20, or rather 60 lower at 158.70. The bean oil was off 48 at 24.95. Mercantile exchange, feeder cattle, August contract at $116.05. They were off $1.30 today. August futures in the live cattle at 88.32 1/2 were down 47 1/2. And the October's 75 cents lower at $91.80 a hundredweight. Lean hogs finished the August contract at $71.75, and they were down 7 1/2 cents for the day. The outside markets, crude oil futures $73.35 a barrel, down a buck. The U.S. dollar at 85.62 now, down up up 0.13. And the Dow at 11,094 is up 6.72 points. Most of the time you'll hear that, just up 6 points at 11,094 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace and your quick reaction to Friday's USDA crop production report.
Well, the report itself, probably the surprise continues to be the USDA recognizing the better-than-expected old crop bean demand by raising exports and feed use, and that in turn lowered carryout. Then the yield on the beans, lowering bean yield, but yet they raised the corn yield. So highlighted the report itself, but probably the shocker was the market reaction with December corn futures going below the 250 area, generating some fairly huge sell stops or huge selling from the commodity funds themselves as they continue to liquidate a still fairly long position.
Some new contract lows as losses continue in the corn pit, but they held fairly steady in the face of what was a hefty loss on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, we saw the funds step back in, sell probably another 20,000 contracts on the day when it's all said and done. December corn went down and moved below the contract lows, the lows we made there last December, just below that 237.5, 237.25 area. What was interesting was the market's ability to come so-called screaming back. The market sort of gradually worked its way down there, recorded the low probably right around that 1240 area, and we touched a quarter a couple of times, and before we knew it, the December futures was back to 238.75. So the market put in an impressive four and a half cent rally in just a matter of 10 minutes, and that was quite encouraging to see it bounce off that. But in order for corn to go higher, we need to get back above the 240 area and see some good old fashioned demand come at it.
You think that's possible as we head into harvest season, or will we need to get a few bushels under our belt from the fields first?
I think we've got to continue with the theme of two different markets. I think the futures market will have a low in place here ahead of harvest, preferably prior to this Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Short-term in here, I think the market's kind of going to consolidate, drift and wander, and try to establish that low, whereas if we do go lower, I think it's going to be on the side of the cash market. I feel there's still some risk and basis in cash market. So I think the futures market, corn is getting fairly close, but not just yet.
And how much would you expect the cash to widen out?
I could say we could probably see another 10 to 15 cents in the basis, and that probably be enough for now. We're starting to see some LDPs show up, especially in the Western Belt. So that's going to put the sell pressure to the side here as producers look at the opportunity to sort of collect an LDP and sort of hanging on for a post-harvest rally.
This will be one place that puts some real pressure on producers to protect themselves after they've, if they have to make a sale across the scale. At those lower prices, they'll be able to collect an LDP potentially. That's one way that they can recoup some of that loss. What else might be available to them?
Well, there's several things, and you probably need to look at different options. By taking LDP and hanging loose, you're still vulnerable to downside risk. If we don't get that up, you're still caught. You still need to market the cash corn itself. So you take your LDP and then buy a put option to protect in case it does not go up. You can just plain take the LDP, sell the cash grain, and buy paper, own on paper, because if we do get a rally, it's going to be on the board, too. The funds are going to buy the paper, not the cash. But probably the biggest play of the whole year will be owning cash corn. There's still a lot of demand out there, and if you look at the carry in the marketplace, I have a feeling that the best place to be is in the cash market, is bottom line.
Keep your bins full.
Pretty much so, and there's a lot of programs out there promoting building of bins, and that's probably the right thing to do for at least one more year.
All right, and then turn your attention to the soy complex. It looks like, at least from the numbers and the spread and the high and the low today, that August in the beans expired pretty orderly this afternoon.
Yeah, no real big fireworks there. For this expiration to kick in, you probably got to go with the theory now. If the September's at 556, probably downside risk would be where the August went off at 549.75. That's fairly common, nothing new there. But probably the impressive thing today is the bean market was able to post record a hook price reversal to the upside. It made a new low for the move and was able to come back and close higher than the previous session's high. It even opened below the previous day's low. So it's kind of impressive technically that the beans were able to hang in there. Now the key is to get some follow-through and some heavy volume. If we can see some follow-through here, maybe we can get a quick 5 to 10 cent pop in the bean market.
Anything to add on the meats for the afternoon?
Well, we saw the meats correct after the huge up we saw last week. I think the newswire will probably say profit-taking will be the main theme in through here. There is a little concern that maybe Friday's USDA cattle and feed report would show another large round of placements. So with the Japanese business here, giving the market some optimism, we'll probably consolidate and see what Friday's USDA report has to say. The August hogs expired today at 71.75, and so it might be the function of the hog market to try to put on a little bit more strength here to close that gap there that it left. But they'll watch the cash market. Cash hogs will probably be steady at best the rest of the week.
How much locking in are you advising livestock producers to do for corn and bean meal?
I say you've got to be a big buyer here between now and the middle of September. I think you got to use this wide basis to your advantage. The market has become overextended to the upside here this spring and summer. Now, I have a feeling we're going to go a little bit to the downside, being overextended. I think you got to use that to your advantage and have your needs booked clear through late winter by the middle of September.
Kurt, we appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Monday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Ed Geezer will have a forecast. Actually, I don't have Ed's forecast in front of me. I forgot to bring that in studio. Let me see if I can find it very quickly. Right there on our website, you can always go to WILLAG.org for a lot of information, including the forecast from WILL, which says partly cloudy skies tonight, lows around 60, north winds around 10 miles an hour this evening, becoming light. Tomorrow, sunny, highs in the mid-80s with some light winds tomorrow night, mostly clear, low in the upper 50s with light winds. That's how easy it is. Go visit our website for the weather at WILLAG.org. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment to take a complete look at the agricultural news. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report.
In agricultural news, Tyson Foods and the Illinois state government have reached a tentative agreement to settle an odor nuisance lawsuit. The Illinois Attorney General's Office filed the lawsuit in January of 1997, claiming Tyson's Joslyn facility violated state odor nuisance laws. The settlement calls for Tyson to pay up to $1.7 million in civil penalties and to perform technical work on equipment at the plant. Researchers are investigating the use of dry distiller's grain in human food production. Scientists at South Dakota State University say DDGs can be a good source of protein and fiber for humans while being low in calories. Food products containing DDGs become darker in appearance, and at high levels, DDGs impact flavor. Efforts are underway to make DDGs more bland, color, flavor, and aroma neutral. Other research is concentrating on the optimal liquid to wash food-grade distiller's grain. South Korean officials today say they are close to nearing agreement with the U.S. to resume beef imports. An official with the Agriculture and Forestry Ministry's Livestock Bureau says the two nations are in the final stages of negotiation. Vocational education, which includes FFA, recently got some good news. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she files this report.
Congress recently put their stamp of approval on career and technical education when they reauthorized the Perkins Act. The Perkins Act is the bill that outlines how career and technical education programs work in our country. That includes agriculture training and FFA.
It's good news that Congress recognized that career and technical education is an important part of our nation's education system and that they gave the green light for those programs in the future.
American Farm Bureau budget specialist Pat Wolf says this is good news because the administration asked for big cuts to the programs, calling career and technical education outdated.
But Congress said, hey, no, wait a minute. We still need programs that teach people a trade, that teach people hands-on skills. And those programs can be just as academically rigorous as regular classes.
Wolf says that's good news for the nation's agriculture industry, which is a big supporter of agricultural training and FFA.
Those are important to farmers and ranchers who need workers on their farms, and to the industry, which needs to develop leaders for the future.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
USDA's latest briefing paper suggests the expansion of ethanol and biodiesel production in the U.S. may require adjustment of the renewable fuel standard beyond its current 7.5 billion gallon target by 2012. The paper also suggests expansion of cellulosic requirements in the 2005 Energy Act. And government officials say thousands of tons of livestock feed are being recalled because it may contain a small amount of banned bovine material. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says there may have been cross-contamination at an Alabama factory used by H.J. Baker & Brothers. The company makes feed supplements for dairy cattle, poultry, and other livestock. One U.S. feed producer has been instructed to recall about 28 million pounds. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming. Here at the WILL radio stations, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website where you can sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free. Just scroll down the page and hit subscribe. Along the way, you'll find the AM 580 Fall Ag Outlook panel schedule, including several this week on August the 16th in Tuscola, the 17th in Decatur, and the 19th in West Lafayette, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be out and about with a whole bunch of our analysts this week, again in Tuscola, the 16th, on the 17th in Decatur, and on the 19th in West Lafayette. Visit our website at willag.org, that's willag.org, for complete details. Well, up next, researchers at the University of Illinois have created a list of soybean varieties most susceptible to green stem. This is the disorder that keeps the plant from maturing properly and causes harvest headaches for farmers. When farmers go to the field this fall to harvest the season soybean crop, they'll likely cuss a little when the beans get tough. There's a disorder, researchers are hesitant to say disease, called green stem that keeps the soybean plant from dying down. Kurt Hills, a research specialist from the University of Illinois, he and other colleagues have been looking into the problem.
Green stem is actually not a disease as far as we can tell. We're calling it a disorder right now, mainly because we don't know what causes it. We've been investigating the reasons why we get it for a number of years, and so far we haven't come up with anything substantial yet, so we're going to continue calling it a disorder for now. One thing we do know about it is that different soybean cultivars or different varieties can have different sensitivity to the disorder. Some of them have a high propensity to get the disorder, and some of them don't get it at all.
Those that do get the disorder always get green stem, and usually at about the same rate. It would be nice if there was a way for farmers to tell which soybean varieties were most susceptible to green stem. Fortunately, Illinois researchers took advantage of the trial plots the land-grant institution puts out around the state. They started surveying for green stem in the latest soybean varieties back in 2001.
Yes, we have, as I said, rated all these trials, and we do this annually, and we do put it up as a percentage basis, the percent of plants in a given plot that has green stem. And we put this on the web at the ACES website where we present the VIPS information. That stands for Variety Information Program for Soybean.
That's Varietal Information Program for Soybeans. Just search for VIPS, V-I-P-S, and University of Illinois. It is just one of the ways the U of I reaches out with information to farmers. In this case, information that will keep the harvest season, when it rolls around, going just a bit more smoothly.
Green stem is a problem. Not that it reduces yield, because we don't believe that it does, but it aggravates growers. Those green stems remain moist and pliable, and they're more difficult to cut. The knives of the combine just can't get through them as well, and so the growers have to rev up the combines and expend more fuel. to get through those areas. What you actually find is many of them will just cut around big patches in their field and just wait till frost kills the plants, and then they go in and cut them.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, on this Monday afternoon, the folks at the Andersons are not available, but Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois is. He's one of those numbers I can remember off the top of my head. Good afternoon to you, Paul. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
No problem, Todd. Nice to talk to you.
Quickly, if you can give me a recap of what happened on Friday with the USDA numbers and how it may have differed from what you expected and how you thought today's marketplace went, please.
Todd, the market was basically looking at a slightly smaller estimate on the corn and soybean numbers. The report came in much of a surprise. The corn came in at 10,975 at 152.2 bushels per acre average. The soybean number came in at 2,927 and the yield at 39.6 bushels per acre average. The real deal was the Illinois crop at 172 bushels per acre, Indiana 167, Iowa 173, and it was based a lot on the idea of A, it was planted early. The plant populations in the corn fields were quite high, and the historic relationship is the crop that's planted early, the yields are generally on the plus side.
You think the 173 out of Iowa is right, given the number of problems that they've had in the Western Corn Belt?
Well, I talked to a very large, well-respected trading office in Cedar Rapids, and they said that they thought it was a smaller crop, as well as Minnesota, Nebraska. Those were the key areas. I think the Illinois crop is maybe rated 2 to 3 bushels too high. Some of the preliminary spot survey checks through the state by some of the private people would also indicate that. The other thing that people are talking about is that definitely the weather forecast is non-threatening. We still have people in the state of Illinois that do need a good drink of water when it's all said and done. The bean pod counts are good, and we still have a large growing station. The other thing, Todd, that I wanted to share with you is that we're getting comments is the crop does look very healthy in the corn. We do think that because of the planted early, we're maybe 10 days earlier than expected on some of the maturity. The depth of fill, we think that the crop is a little more mature than a year ago, where the depth of fill of kernel, made the difference between night and day. And the verdict is still out on that, and that's something we'll be watching very carefully in the next 30 to 45 days.
And one very quick answer from you. Will basis levels continue to widen? And the expectation, of course, is that this is where farmers will find some extra cash from LDP.
Number one, thank goodness we do have a very good farm program. That's endorsement number one. And the idea that the basis levels will widen only if the crop gets larger.
Okay, thanks much, Paul.
Have a profitable day.
You too, Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Usually you can hear him on Wednesday afternoon filling in for the Andersons right here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. Now, time for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Republican Judy Bart Topinka says she wants to make Illinois the national leader in clean energy. Topinka said today that if she's elected governor, she'll push legislation requiring Illinois utilities to use some renewable energy sources, such as wind power. She also proposes requiring all gasoline to contain at least 10% ethanol. Indiana Senator Evan Bayh is at the Iowa State Fair today touting his support for renewable fuels. Bayh, who's considering a presidential run in 2008, says more investment is needed in research and expansion of the distribution system. He says his record on renewable fuels sets him apart from other potential candidates. The decision to keep or block a third-party candidate on the 52nd District Illinois Senate ballot won't be made for at least a week. A spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections says a hearing officer this Friday will hear challenges filed by Democrats questioning the petitions of Socialist Equality Party candidate Joe Pararuskas. Republican Judy Myers and Democrat Mike Frericks are the two major party candidates seeking the 52nd District Senate seat. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels is supporting another time zone switch. This time, five counties in southwestern Indiana plus Pulaski County in northern Indiana want to switch back to Eastern Time after moving to Central Time earlier this year. The governor says when the counties requested the original switch, they didn't know which time zone neighboring counties would be in. Agronomy Day turns 50 on Thursday. The University of Illinois' annual showcase for crop research was founded in 1956 to give the state's farmers and farm businesses an annual recap of the latest research by U of I crop scientists. Thursday's program will include four tours of crops on the university's South Farm in Urbana. 25 topics will be covered on the tours, including wheat, corn, and soybean diseases, pest management, and new machinery technology. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Thanks much, Jim. Jim Meadows, of course, with us every afternoon, for the most part here, during the Closing Mark Report, that last little story. Thank you, Jim, for including Agronomy Day, the 50th Agronomy Day here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. I'd urge you to come and visit us on the South Farms this Thursday morning. It starts at 7 a.m. in the morning. If you plan to take all four of those tours, it will take a good portion of the morning. Each one is about an hour in length. I'll be there all morning long dispatching the wagons into the research plots here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, out on the South Farms from the Assembly Hall, just to the south on St. Mary's Road, and you'll go east of the Assembly Hall. We hope to see you then. Don't forget also that Eldon Gould of the Risk Management Agency will be in during the noon hour to talk about crop insurance, I believe, during an address to the folks who come in for Agronomy Day on this Thursday afternoon. Now let's talk about the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Mark Russo is with us. Hi, Mark.
Hi there, Todd.
Hey, how are we going to do on Thursday? Is the weather going to be all right?
Well, starting around that time frame is really when the next rain chance here comes into the Midwest. But the way that things are going, at least for your area there and folks in the Champaign-Urbana area, the main rain does not look to come in until probably Thursday night into Friday morning. So overall, Thursday at this time looks like a pretty good day.
And prior to that, at the beginning of the week, we'll be at the Illinois State Fairgrounds tomorrow for Ag Day.
Oh, perfect day here. If you like cooler, less humid, and dry conditions,
I do.
Which in my opinion is perfect, but everyone has their own taste. It looks like a great day, and really that's the pattern here for at least the next several days here with just some rains coming in into the Midwest and namely eastern Illinois here, not until late this week.
You better check up on the crops as well. Bring me up to date on the western areas of the Corn Belt and how they're faring.
Well, it's been kind of night and day here for what we've seen so far this month here compared to the growing season. You know, up through really the end of July, we had not much rain across the western Corn Belt, also some significant heat. And so far this month, though, the western Midwest has gotten bombed with rains here, and that's helped to significantly improve soil moisture conditions and improve crop conditions across that area. Now it's just a matter of assessing what these rains have done here for late filling here of corn as well as for pod development of soybeans.
And one final question. We'll be at the Farm Progress Show the last week of August. Can you crystal ball that just a bit for us in Iowa, the center part at Amana, Iowa?
Yeah, I guess an early call, Todd, on that would be, well, kind of a similar pattern as this week. You know, some rains here and there, probably more so where you have a day or two of rain followed by, you know, 2 to 3 days on the dry weather. So it's all going to come down to timing. One thing for sure, it doesn't look like any kind of real significant heat building back into the Midwest, really, at any time this month here. So overall, I'd say right now it looks like a fairly quiet end of August pattern.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo joining us from Chesapeake Energy's office in Chicago. He does that every Monday afternoon. That is the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.